Hello and welcome to the Kinetic Fitness Show, where we inspire you to live a longer, healthier, happy, and more joyful life. We cover everything you need to know to be optimally healthy in your mind, body, and spirit. Are you ready to become the ultimate version of yourself? Well, let's dive into another episode with your host and guide by your side, Allie West.
Boom, welcome. I felt like starting the show with a boom today, so there we go. Welcome to the show, welcome to the Kinetic Fitness Show podcast. My name is Ali West. Thank you for rocking with me, being dialed in to today's episode. This is episode number 64. I have a great guest lined up for you today and another great episode. But before we do that, before I introduce my guest and tell you about her, a little bit of housekeeping, so to speak. If you haven't already liked, followed, subscribed to this podcast, please do that. Either do it now, pause this, click that subscribe button, or do it at the end. Just make sure you subscribe and then you'll be updated with whenever my new episodes drop. So that's a cool thing to do. Please subscribe. The second thing, if you haven't already left the review and you've maybe listened to one of my episodes before, or this is your first time and you listen to this one and you enjoy it, please leave me a review. Reviews help all podcasters, not just me, any podcasters. Reviews help to boost our rankings and get our names about. And the more people that know about my podcast, that know about this podcast, The Kinetic Fitness Show, the more people I can inspire to live longer, healthier, happier, and more joyful lives, because that's the mission of this podcast. And the third and final thing is that actually this one I really love, and I like engaging with people as well. So if you are enjoying this episode or any of my other episodes, please just take a screenshot, grab a screenshot on your phone, post it on your social media, particularly Instagram, that's the one I tend to be on the most, and tag me in it, Ali West Fitness, A-L-I-W-E-S-T Fitness, Ali West Fitness. If you tag me, I will reshare it, repost it, and share it with all of my friends and followers as well. And we can spread the love, and we can also start a conversation. I can get chatting with you and help you if you have any issues or need any help with your health and fitness and well-being and mindset and all that jazz. So please do take a screenshot and share it on your social media, Ali West Fitness, on Instagram and on Facebook. You can also get me on LinkedIn, just search Ali West, and I'm on all the socials. So just make sure you hit me up. I'm always looking to connect with new people, meet new people, and meet my listeners as well. So don't hesitate to reach out to me. I'm here to help you. There is one other way that you can get in contact with me as well. In the description of this podcast, in the notes section of this podcast, where it tells you the information about what this episode is all about, you should be able to leave me a voice message. This is through Anchor, which is the podcasting platform that I use to host my podcasts. You can actually send me a voice note through that. Really simple to do. Just click on that link, leave me a voice note, tell me how you're finding the episode, what you like, any questions that you may have. Even if you think of a guest that might be a good fit for the podcast, reach out and let me know. And any topics that we haven't covered already that you might want me to speak about on this show, let me know. I can only help you. I can only give you the value and the episodes that you want if you reach out to me, particularly if you've been listening to this podcast for a while. Maybe you're a regular listener. Get in touch with me. I want to know who you are. I want to get to know you and help you and inspire you. So do get in touch. There's many ways that you can do that. And I always come back to everyone that leaves me a comment, sends me a direct message, sends me a voice note, sends me an email. I always come back. So make sure that you get in touch with me. And the final note in relation to that as well is the Facebook page, the Kinetic Fitness Show Facebook page. If you just search for the Kinetic Fitness Show on Facebook, like the page, and then you can be updated through the medium of Facebook. That's it on the housekeeping side of things. Let's get stuck into today's episode, because that's what you're here for. My guest today is Pam Burrows, and Pam is also known as the People Booster. I have known Pam for probably about 5 or 6 years now. We actually met at a business networking event. It's funny because I tend to meet a lot of people networking, and quite a few of the guests that have been on the podcast I know through networking. And the funny thing is, or maybe the interesting thing is, that I haven't spoken to Pam, or we haven't spoken to each other for a few years until we recorded this podcast episode. And I've been doing a lot of work on LinkedIn recently, and Pam is very active on LinkedIn. I saw one of her posts and I thought to myself, Pam's a perfect guest to get on this podcast, to get on the show. Why have I not invited her on the show already? But everything happens for a reason and at the right time, divine timing and all that. So I reached out to Pam, sent her an email or a message or both and asked her to come on the podcast. And she said yes, she obliged. So she popped over to my gym, Kinetic Fitness here in Nottingham. We had a little bit of a catch up, told me about what's going on in her life, in her business, and I did the same. And then we sat down and recorded this episode that you're about to listen to right now. So a little bit about Pam. Pam is a person that goes into businesses and helps businesses, employees, management, owners with their mindset and their health and well-being within the workplace. She's also a public speaker and an NLP practitioner, and she has over 20 years experience in what she does. Where she focuses a lot of her energy is making sure that employees, management, owners, as I said, whether they are entrepreneurs, business owners, or just employees on their career path, maybe working 9 to 5, she makes sure that those people are looked after in terms of their mindset and their health and well-being, so that things like sick days can be reduced, mental health can be improved, and productivity in the workplace can be improved as well. She also does regular public speaking gigs, so she speaks in front of hundreds of people all over the country, and also appears regularly on TV and radio as well, talking about various different topics in terms of mindfulness, mindset, well-being, all of those kinds of areas. So Pam's an amazing person, and this is a great episode that we recorded, and I know that you're going to really enjoy it, particularly if you want to improve your well-being and your wellness within the working environment. You're going to get so much value out of today's episode. That's it for now. Let's get stuck in with it. Let's bring Pam in, start today's episode, and she's going to tell you much more about herself and her journey, and we're going to share a great episode with you today. Episode 64 with Pam Burrows. Enjoy. Hello, I'm here with Pam Burrows for the Kinetic Fitness Show podcast. Thank you so much for joining me today, Pam. How are you?
It's an absolute pleasure, Ali. And I'm good. I'm really good. I'm dressed for spring, even though it's foggy and dark outside.
I know, you've got some jazzy shoes on here that I know we can't see them because we're on an audio podcast, but they're nice silver. Are they
silver brogues? Yeah,
nice. And some jazzy floral trousers. And I'm just in my black hoodie, so I've been outdone on the fashion. It's been a while, hasn't it, since I've seen you?
I haven't seen you in years. And I think the last time I saw you, it was just hello. So we haven't had a proper chat for a long time.
So that's going to change over the next however long this podcast goes on for. It's interesting because I've been starting doing a lot more on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. And then you popped up and I thought, do you know what, Pam would be a excellent person to bring on the podcast.
I hope I'll be excellent
with all
no
of
pressure.
Your knowledge and wisdom, so I'm hoping we can tap into some of that for sure. But before we do that, I think the best starting point is probably to introduce yourself to the people listening in, tell them a little bit of your backstory, who you are, what you do, and how you help people.
Okay, so whistle stop tour through my background. So I started as a nursery nurse looking after kids of families in crisis. Then I did my social work qualification, then I started training social workers. Then I did a little while in the business world, travelling internationally, training blue chip companies in sales and negotiations, which sounds like such a kind of right angle from what I was doing. But I realised that people are people. It was really quite shocking. I was like, oh, I'm so used to senior social workers and directors of children's services and that kind of person. And then I went into the business world and I was like, oh yeah, you remind me of that person and you remind me of that person. And even though they were very, very corporate, I'm thinking people are people. So that was interesting, but I didn't really like traveling that much. And sales wasn't my thing. So 20 years ago, I set up on my own and now call myself the People Booster. And I basically go into organisations and boost people. So I help them with well-being, confidence, mindset, do conference keynotes and workshops.
Awesome. That was quick. Quick history. Tell me and the listeners then about how this idea came around to set up on your own and set up this company and become the People Booster, in air quotes. How did that happen? Did you have like a bit of a brainwave or an epiphany or anything like that?
Well, I often tell the story about being in the back of a minibus in China. So I was training 12 Chinese male salespeople, and every morning they picked me up from my hotel and I sat in the back of the bus with these 12 guys who all spoke Chinese, and we went to the training venue and spent 10 hours a day, 4 days. And I got to the end of that and they were all still wearing the same suits and still speaking in Chinese unless we were in the training room. And I just felt completely, we were talking earlier about disconnecting. I felt disconnected from what I was doing. I was thinking, it's not my material. It was based on the research of the people I was working for. And I thought, this isn't me, you know, just not me. So I was in this sweaty minibus in Shanghai, thinking there's got to be something else that's more me than this. And I went to the company that I was working for and I said, can I be more creative? Because they're based in South Yorkshire. And I thought, if I can be office based, do something more on the creative training development side of things, then it would be a bit more me. But there really wasn't anything in house for that. And I started looking at jobs and the jobs didn't spark up. And I thought, what do I really want to do? So, and I do this actually when I'm coaching people who aren't sure of their direction. I just wrote down, if I had a magic wand, what would my work life look like? So I wrote this list and I looked at the list and I thought, that looks like self-employment. That doesn't look like a job you're going to find. So I applied for a mortgage because I knew I wouldn't be able to get one without my self-employment books of 3 years. So I applied for a mortgage, bought a house, sacked my girlfriend at that time because that relationship wasn't working. So I ended up self-employed with a mortgage on my own in 1999 and didn't look back. So it's been an uphill struggle because self-employment, especially because to start with, it was a lot of my local authority connections that I was getting the work from. And then the recession hit in 2009-2010, and that really took a big swipe out of my business. But what I teach people, what I do in coaching, workshops, conferences, is I talk to people about life isn't about what happens, it's about what you do with that and how you approach it, your perspective. So I thought, well, I can look at this and go, it's not working, it's dreadful, go get a job, or, you know, sit in a heap and cry. Or I can say, well, this is an opportunity to say, rather than doing all the work that just came, that, you know, I was very lucky in the first few years that work just kind of landed, was, well, if you're actually going to go out there and ask for the work that you want, the stuff you really want to do that really fires you up, what would that be? So it was almost like the same process again, 10 years on, to say, what do I really want? So I thought, actually, I love working with people on how they feel about themselves. So confidence, well-being. And that's developed over the second lot of 10 years into helping people to stop pushing themselves so hard, push the business hard, but don't push yourself so hard that you break, and helping people with that. So that hiatus in 2010 was a good, you know, have a look at it all again, a refresh, and see, what do I actually want this business to look like? What do I want to do? And so probably more in these last 10 years and particularly the last 5 years, I am only doing things that I absolutely love doing, which is great.
That's nice.
Rather than, you know, sometimes it's like, oh, today I'm doing that job that I'm not really that keen on, but it's money in the bank. I don't really do anything like that now. So I feel very lucky.
I always believe that it's not worth almost sacrificing your happiness and your sense of joy for doing something that you just feel like you have to do. And that's difficult. People might be listening to this, but it's like easy for you two to say you've got your own businesses. But I think everyone's got the choice and everyone's got the ability to be able to just take a step back and reflect and look at their life from all different angles. And like you did, write down or say to yourself, what do I really want? What do I want to achieve from life? And there's no reason why anybody, no matter what kind of race you are, color you are, what kind of background you've come from, or what job or situation you're currently in, why you can't make a change or look at things and say, I'm gonna make the necessary changes to live the life that I want to live. So
yeah,
that's amazing that you did that. Just a quick question off the back of that, when you back in 99 2000, I was 13 then.
Oh my god, that's terrible.
Back then, what you kind of said to yourself and wrote down or visualized for yourself, how you wanted your life to be and how you wanted your business to be, was that the same when you looked at it again 10 years later and 15 years later, or did it shift and evolve over time? How did that kind of pattern develop, or how did the journey or the progression change, or was it the same?
Oh, it was absolutely an evolution. Absolutely. So what I did, because when I went freelance, let me just do the math. So for about 10 years-ish, I'd been doing training courses in one form or another. And as I say, I'd done that in local authorities with all kinds of different agencies, from the police to social services to health service. And then I'd done the corporate stuff. So I sat down at the beginning of the business and wrote down everything I could offer training on. And I'm thinking at that point, because of course this is before the days of the of social media and being able to get easy access to business coach. I didn't even know there was such a thing as business coaches then. So I basically wrote down a huge list, everything I could possibly train people on, thinking that if you've got a big menu, there's going to be something somebody wants on that, and you're going to get more customers because you've got a bigger menu. I don't know if you've ever watched those, you know, where Gordon Ramsay goes into failing restaurants
Kitchen nightmares or whatever.
Yeah, those kinds of things. And Alex Polizzi, when she goes into failing hotels, they always pull people up having too big a menu.
Yeah.
Because you just can't figure out what you want to eat. And B, it looks like you've just got a load of stuff in the freezer and nothing is your speciality. It's all kind of just a big
like a jack of all trades, master of none.
Exactly that. And over the years, particularly in these last 5 years, because 5 or 6 years ago I joined the Professional Speaking Association, so I now have actual colleagues, which is another thing about going into business. I think people underestimate what it's like to work on your own.
Yeah.
And it took me a few years, this is going to sound really stupid, but it took me quite a few years to realize I worked on my own and that I was lonely, because my work is going into a room full of people, sometimes hundreds, maybe thousands of people, and talking. So of course I wasn't lonely. But when you're sitting at your desk, developing stuff, having ideas, or struggling with, you know, the challenges, then you're really on your own and nobody really gets it. So that if you kind of leapfrog all of that to now, I'm in small group masterminds where we meet up together and talk about each other's business. Most of those people are also professional speakers, so we're speaking the same language and we understand the business. I have various coaches for various things. I do co-coaching with friends. I listen to YouTube stuff all the time with advice. So, you know, I'm no longer, and now I'm lucky enough to have my girlfriend, my current and future girlfriend, who's working in the business with me. She does all the stuff that I don't do, like spreadsheets and being organized and sending out invoices. And
sounds like me and Sarah.
It's perfect.
I think it's powerful when you're working with someone that that you love and that knows you intimately, I think it takes it can take your business to the next level. And yeah, we're quite good like that in the fact that we've got our own individual skill sets, but we also combine together very well as well. So I think if you can, a lot of people say to me, oh, how do you work with your wife? Yeah. And that won't work. And I just think I wouldn't want it any other way, because we've been in a position where we've been, as we were speaking off air, we've been, myself and Sarah have been at the lowest of the low the last few years. And I think if I wasn't in it with her, and vice versa, we might have, or individually, we probably would have given up. So we've been able to raise each other up, pull each other through, hold each other accountable. And that's the big thing that I got from what you just said there, being part of these mastermind groups or with other business owners or working with a coach, is it gives you that kind of sense of being in a community, of being belonging and something that you belong to. But also it's the accountability, and that's the biggest thing. The accountability is huge, and that's what we push here at the gym, and I hope to do it with the podcast as well, is to hold people accountable, because when you've got the accountability, then the results you can get are amazing.
Because the thing that happens, and I've seen myself do this so many times, I have a great idea for a new thing, a new offering or a new way of working or whatever it might be, and I get really excited about it, and it's probably going to take my business to the next level. It's going to be a great thing. And then the next day I get a customer call saying, we'd like you to do this. Can you write us a proposal and say what that would look like? And I might spend all day doing that. And then the thing that I had an idea about is less important because there isn't a customer asking for it yet. Mm. I do have a friend actually who's very successful. She sells things before she's built them.
Yeah, nice.
So
yeah.
Then she has to build it. Whereas, you know, a lot of development stuff, or just organizing yourself, making your office a nicer place to be in, those things fall off the list when you're on your own, because there isn't anybody holding you. You know, there isn't a boss going, have you done this yet? There isn't a deadline for it.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of accountability is it's about getting things done and done well. But also, if you want to grow and improve and polish up your business and make it really quality, then it's those little things that, well, they don't really matter. Well, actually, they do. And they are what makes the difference. And they fall off the list if you haven't got somebody saying, have you done that?
It reminds me of that quadrant in Stephen Covey, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And it's the most important part of the quadrant is the... what is it? The not urgent and important. And people don't spend any time in that quadrant. They're always doing stuff that they don't need to do, or urgent and important, or not urgent, not important. They're the places where people spend most of the time. And I think when you can do those, they always seem like bigger tasks, but or they can be small and big, but sometimes like, oh, I put that off because it's not quite urgent right now, but it is really important. And if you spend your time doing those important, not urgent tasks, you have the biggest impacts in all areas, not just business.
I've found a little trick that I wouldn't necessarily advise anybody else to use this because I haven't tested it with anybody else, but it works for me, is if there's something you're putting off that would really grow your business or your lifestyle, or what, you know, it's a good thing but you're putting it off, is find something that is even bigger than that. So then when you're putting that thing off, you get on with the thing you went to do in the first place. And it just sounds completely bonkers, but it's working for me. So, you know, if you need to clean the windows and you keep putting it off, find you know, maybe cleaning the drains needs doing.
Yeah.
It's not
or
really
delegate
a business.
That to someone else. Yeah. They sound like terrible jobs.
Yeah. not good examples. I hadn't thought this through, you see.
No, that's cool. So you said that you had this big list of ways that you could help people and maybe all these different skill sets. What did you end up narrowing things down to? Like, what would you say is your kind of, again, it's not my favorite word, but niche, or is what kind of area have you carved out for yourself, and what kind of skill sets have you focused on and said, like, this is what I'm amazing at, this is what I'm passionate about, and this is how I can help people? What are they?
Okay, so one of my favourite phrases in this is, just because you can doesn't mean you should. So there are things I can do, things that people want me to do, and things that I can do well, but they aren't the things necessarily that I should do. So I go for things that... have you come across the Ikigai model? It's a Japanese model of what you ought to do.
No.
So there's four...
Sounds interesting.
You'd love it. Four interlocking circles. You can just Google Ikigai, I-K-I-G-A-I. And there's four interlocking circles, and the sweet spot is in the middle where they all interlock. So one is doing something that you love. Now, a lot of people set up in business to do something that they love, but they haven't got the other three things going on.
Yeah.
So the second thing is, will it make money? So if you're doing something that you love, sometimes you go, oh, it doesn't matter that I'm not making a lot of money. It's all about lifestyle. Yeah, but you still got to pay your bills.
Yeah.
So you love it and it makes money. The third thing is that it's something that the world needs. So is it actually, you know, is there a need for it? So you love it. Oh, yeah. You love it. It'll make money. The world needs it. You're creating a service that the world needs. And then the fourth one is, are you any good at it? Because sometimes people set up in business doing something that's a bit of a hobby, and actually they're not that good at it, or they're not that good at it yet. You know, so you need to have those four things in place. But you can look at the model and you can say, yeah, there's loads of people loving what they do, good at what they do. The world needs it, but they're not charging enough. They're struggling. Or they're making lots of money, but as in terms of a service to the world, it's not very ethical. So they might struggle with that. So, you know, any one of those four things can be out of whack and the business isn't going to flourish, or you're not going to flourish. There are people set up in business doing something that they know the world needs. It will make lots of money and they're good at it, but actually they don't love it. And if your heart's not in it, it's really hard to get yourself out of bed in the morning. You will make yourself ill. So basically what I now do is I help people not to burn out or to recover from burnout, and to look at how to look after themselves properly in a way that joins up. So I might talk to people about their physical health, their mental health, their emotional state, their habits. But that might also mean looking at how they do their work, their business, their relationships. It's how it all fits together. And sometimes it might be as simple as somebody realizing they're not drinking enough water. Mm. Or it might be about there's somebody toxic in their life that they're being really passive about, not doing something about. But a lot of it, I talk about this in my little book, Burnout Buster, which started really as a handout. And then it got bigger and bigger and became a little book. And it's just about noticing the habits you've got that you don't even, it's not on your radar because it's just how you do things. So you might say things like, oh, I love my work. I probably work more hours than I get paid for, but I really love it. That is an indicator of the potential for burnout, because you don't notice when you're not switching off, or you even forget how to switch off. So you have a day off, but you're still buzzing. You've still got, you get into a bit of a stress reaction. So you've got a lot of adrenaline and cortisol, the stress hormones going on. And it means that when you try and switch off, you feel restless. So you go, oh, I may as well do a bit of work.
Yeah.
I feel quite energized. Actually, you're not really energized. You're still just switched on into a stress reaction. And it means that your immune system gets depleted, and you forget to look after yourself. And I have got a little quiz that people can check their burnout risk on. And I do it sometimes. You can just do it on my website, but sometimes I get people doing it live in a workshop, and they're all going, oh my God, I've come out red. What am I going to do about this? And I think it makes me smile every time, because people don't notice these things. And yet as soon as they get the quiz results, they go, oh yeah, I guess I always do that. You know, I always do a bit of, I take
work.
It's
because they don't take the time though, isn't it? People, they don't, we're speaking about this again before we started recording, and it's people don't take that time to just have a break and switch off, but not just have a break, but actually reflect.
Yeah.
And just say, okay, how has the last week gone, or the last month, or the last year? And what am I doing well? What am I not doing well? What are the challenges? Those kind of open-ended questions. People never do that, particularly business people. Mm. They're 100 miles an hour all the time, focused on the business or their career or a deadline, and they just don't stop.
Yeah.
So I think taking the time, even if it's just 5 minutes a week, just to reflect and review is powerful.
Sure. Yeah. So it's probably coming up to about 30 years now that I've been working with people in one way or another on their well-being, their mindset, their confidence, their self-esteem, their self-care, all of these things that are about how we are as human beings. And over and over again, I kept seeing these things that people weren't seeing in themselves, but I could see them when I was coaching them or speaking to them at a conference or workshop. And so I started making a note of the things that seemed time and time and time again, the mistakes that people made that made them ill, in whatever form, physical, mental, emotional, or skewed relationships or not sleeping or whatever it was affecting them. And those four things were how they speak to themselves in their own head. So they're beating themselves up, pushing themselves hard, speaking to themselves in a way that somebody really harsh would do. And they're thinking, yeah, I'm driving myself. Yeah, but you're depleting your resources by speaking unkindly in your head. The second thing was failing to do what you just said, which is do some reflection. What's going well? You know, and at the end of the day, it can make a massive difference to the quality of your sleep if just before you go to sleep, you just run through the things that went well.
Mm.
And things you're grateful for. And there's research on the gratitude stuff. You do that before bed. There are apps, but don't do it on an app.
Cause do it on paper.
Done a screen, yeah.
Write it down.
Write it down. Only the good things. Yeah. Only the good things from that day. Even if it's been a really difficult day. In fact, especially when it's been a difficult day. Those are the days when I've found most difference with this. Because what you're doing is you're switching your brain chemicals.
Yeah.
So you start, and if you've had a really difficult day where nothing went right, you might start with, I've got a pillow for my head. I've got a belly full of food. You know, it wasn't lobster and prawns, but I've had beans on toast and I'm full. You know, yeah. You're just grateful for the smallest things. It changes your brain chemistry. You sleep more restfully, wake more alert. And the name of the guy has gone out of my head, but he does the University of Positive Psychology in the States. He was able to show how it improved people's immune system to just write down things you're grateful for.
You can improve your whole immune system just with your words, just with what comes out of your mouth.
Yeah. So how you speak to yourself, noticing the good stuff. The third one is about not trying too hard. So that you're saying yes to everything and you've just got no space in your diary, no space in your head. Sometimes what people do is they react to something with an intention. So let's say that you said to me, Ali, Pam, can you help me out tonight? I need 2 or 3 hours of your time tonight. And I'm feeling a bit tired, I'm feeling a bit busy, but I want to be nice, I want to be helpful, I want you to like me, I want to do the right thing. So I say yes, even though I shouldn't have. And what I'm doing there is I'm ignoring reality.
Yeah.
I'm coming from an intention to do a good thing, but the reality is I haven't got the time and the energy to do with that, to actually put that effort in. And we do that all the time, that we try and get 2 pints in a pint pot. You get to the end of the day, you go, why didn't I get my to-do list done? Well, it was never reality that you were going to get. It was superhuman expectations. And then the fourth thing is how we don't do the little things that boost our energy. So we don't eat, drink, rest, and we don't find joy. And those are the four things we need to do for our energy.
Is this part of your model that you've created?
Yeah, so yeah. this is a model. And I was, being a professional speaker, I wanted to have an acronym because
yeah.
I have a good friend who wrote the book SUMO, which stands for Shut Up and Move On. I thought, I need an acronym. So I took all these four things and I thought, okay, so speaking kindly to yourself in your own mind is compassion. So that's a C. Noticing what's going well is A for acknowledge. The thing about looking realistically at what you've got and what you need to do is about reality. So that's an R. And then the final one about eat, drink, sleep and find joy, that's E for energy. So it stands, it makes the word care.
Love it.
I was dead chuffed about that.
That's awesome. Yeah, and I think all those four things that you've mentioned, I bet you the vast majority of people tuning into this and myself can just say tick, 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 tick.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've been guilty of all of those things and probably a couple of them still am. And that's about being, like you said, acknowledging it, being aware of it, asking yourself the questions, but then taking the action to make improvements.
Absolutely. When I'm running a workshop, I'll say to people, there's two things about today. The first is that you get your head around what you need to do. And the second is you do something about it, you know, because how many people would say, oh, yeah, I get stressed about this. And I know I shouldn't, but, you know, oh, yeah, I know I don't drink enough water, blah. And often, although I've got all kinds of qualifications and I've got a master practitioner in NLP, I've got a social work qualification, I've got a background in childcare and child development, so I understand how the human brain works, and I've got a qualification as a neuroscience professional, I've got all of this stuff. And then at the end of a workshop, somebody will say to me, I am going to go and drink more water, Pam. And I go, fantastic. And I think you haven't needed any of my academic or, you know, intellectual expertise. What you needed was you needed a really big reminder in a persuasive way. So maybe, you know, it's about my speaker skills or whatever. I guess I'm bringing something to the party. But we don't do the things that we know, even though they're dead simple. And how, you know, how much does water make a difference? Well, we're mostly made of water, and you need it to make your brain work, your liver, your kidneys, your heart. You need it to be able to think straight. You need it to be able to not have a temper, you know, so dehydration will make you irritable and more likely to flare up. You know, I mean, how important is water? It's so simple, and we don't do it. So it's all of this stuff, as you say, we know this stuff and we're all pretty much the same. You know, we are.
Why would you say that is then? Why don't people do it? Why do people know it and they don't do it?
I think it's partly how we live today. So the drive is, how much more can you do? How much more can you cram into your day? And as you were saying about the Stephen Covey quadrants, we're focused on what's urgent and important. And we forget the little things. But I also think it's about how we live. And I know that you've got a big thing about connection and working together and helping each other. And I think that's how we're meant to be. You know, we're meant to be tribal. We're meant to be a connected community. And so, you know, simple things like if you're working in an office with other people, somebody will say, shall I put the kettle on? And everybody gets a drink, you know. So it's those little things that actually are huge that just remind us. So I think we're meant to remind each other. It's just that I get paid for doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, good point. Good point, for sure. I always think as well, you's going on about not about having the qualifications and them not really, not the mattering, but I think it always boils down to four things when it comes to people realizing what they need to work on and then actually doing it. And I think it's always the knowledge, having a plan, having accountability, like we spoke about earlier, and taking action. I think when you've got those things, so people will probably come and listen to you and then they pick up a bit of knowledge from your knowledge and your expertise, and then you've given them a little bit of a plan and an action plan, then they can be held accountable by you or by other people, their support system, whatever you want to call it. And then the big one is the taking the action. If they actually do it, then they'll start to see the difference. So I think everything always boils down to those kind of four problems: not having the knowledge, not having a plan, not having accountability, and not taking action. And when you can correct those four things, then you can achieve pretty much anything.
And it's about creating a culture for yourself. If you're in a team, creating, you know, even if you're self-employed, you could start working in shared spaces, you know, shared office spaces and whatever. And I love, sometimes I work with whole teams on a regular basis and I go back in and they'll go, yeah, what we now do as a team is we have a board where we put a post-it up about what went well, or we start the day with how's everybody feeling and what went well yesterday, or we finish the day with who needs to offload, and, you know, and they just form habits. And I often work in the education sector with head teachers, and one of my favouritest head teachers, she's got the kids doing it as well. So she got the staff doing it and the staff have got the kids doing it. And she said, oh, how are you getting on with January and the start of term? She said, oh, we started the term showing the kids the care model. And so now we're all talking about it.
Love it.
So it becomes the culture then, and it becomes the language you use, rather than, oh, I'm dead busy, or, you know, how stressed are you? It's, have you done your gratitude today? Or, you know, what are you celebrating that's gone well? And, you know, how are you measuring your time? Where are you putting the spaces in? I call them sanity spaces. You know, if you don't create sanity spaces in your day, in your week, in your month, in your year, in your life, it's rare that somebody will come along and say, hey, Ali, You need to create a little bit of an hour for yourself there, yeah, to just breathe or, you know, review where you're up to. People don't do that. People will push you on. People will always be going, could you just, and will you help, and can I have? So you have to create sanity spaces yourself and do it on purpose. So yeah, having the people around you speak the same language, create a culture of looking after ourselves and realizing how important that is, why it's important, is a huge part of it.
Yeah, for sure. Let's split this in then to like two kind of separate groups or demographics or whatever you want to call it, and say, let's start with the business owner. Maybe they could be self-employed or an entrepreneur or whatever, or they could have like a team of people working underneath them. What would be some of your kind of top tips for those people? And then on the other end of the spectrum, maybe people that are employed and they're more career based, what would be your tips to them? Or are they the same, or are they different from the two kind of groups of people?
I think they're different, but we don't realize sometimes that they're different. And what I mean by that is the difference between there's a quote about knowing the difference between what you can control and what you can't control.
Yeah, yeah.
And the wisdom to know the difference between those two things. So entrepreneurs, I did some sessions with Nottingham University with the entrepreneurs they have in their incubation system, because they'll push themselves and push themselves and push themselves. Now they have more control over how much they work and how much they do and getting enough sleep and when to switch off and all of that, but they don't necessarily recognize it. So they feel like an employee who's being pushed and pushed and pushed. Actually, if you had a manager, I would say this to lots of entrepreneurs, especially when you're in startup, if you had a manager in an organization who was making you work that hard, you'd be like, I'm going to get the unions on this. This yeah. is not unfair. But you push yourself that hard because you forget that there is a difference, that actually you are in control and you can switch off. You can make that time. But the danger, and I call this a superpower, your superpower can become a super problem. So the danger with entrepreneurs is your superpower is that you absolutely love what you do so much and you can see the vision ahead of you and you're driving forward. I'm doing superhero body
arms
language
here,
by the
yeah.
way. You're driving forward towards this thing. Superpower, fantastic to be that committed and that focused. But it becomes your super problem if you don't know when to dial that back and take a rest and just check where you're up to, celebrate how far you've come rather than always on what else needs to be done. And that's the thing for entrepreneurs, is just to keep a check on yourself. And that might come back to what you were saying, Ali, about you need a plan, you need accountability, and to realize that part of your business plan, not a bolt-on, not an extra, not a you know, you can do it or you cannot do it, optional thing. But as part of your business plan is your well-being plan.
Mm, for sure.
It just becomes a part of that. And then for employees, it's slightly different because you haven't got that much control. But again, you know, people will say to me, no, I don't take a lunch break. I eat while I'm at the computer. And I say, what did your manager say about that? Now, these days, thankfully, it has changed in the 20 years that I've been doing this. These days, managers will often say, I want you to take a lunch break. Please get away from the computer and, you know, have a walk outside, do something else. People say, yeah, actually, my manager tells me to get away from the computer as well. But, you know, I think, well, I'll crack on and I'll get, you know, and we haven't really got anywhere to sit in our building and it's raining outside and. So again, it's people not realising, A, the importance of doing something, and B, making it happen, finding a way rather than finding the obstacles. So if you haven't got somewhere, go somewhere else, go to a cafe, get a buddy to make you accountable for taking a break at lunchtime. It's like the drinking water thing, it's such a simple thing. But as soon as you leave that computer or whatever your particular job focus is, as soon as you leave it, the brain switches into a different mode. If you even just sat away from your computer but in the same building with your eyes closed and some headphones on and just did some breathing, maybe listened to an audiobook or a guided visualization, your brain then goes into what's known as alpha brain waves,
yeah,
which allows it to do all the... just as a little aside, when I was a kid, I had a comic, and my favourite, this was the start of my career, perhaps I never thought of it that way before. There was my favourite cartoon strip was called The Numbskulls, and it was a bit like the movie... Inside Out. So it was all the little people that are in your head that make everything work. So the numbskulls were the little creatures, and they'd be people sweeping up and polishing the windows, which are your eyes, and arguing and, you know, pushing bad words out of the mouth, and, you know, just all this stuff that goes on inside. And I used to absolutely love that. Now, when the brain's in alpha state, what I picture in my mind's eye, that when your brain goes into alpha state and you're just breathing and you're feeling a little calmer, you immediately switch off the adrenaline, the cortisol, the stress hormones, and you bring yourself into a calmer state. And I just picture all the little numbskulls painting the walls, clearing stuff out, you know, chucking rubbish out into a recycling skip, and just maintaining the body. Because what we know is if you constantly stay in a switched on state, the body is in high alert.
Yeah, and the cognitive function goes through the roof when you're in alpha state as well.
So absolutely, you have great more ideas. Yeah. And when you're not doing that and the body can't do its maintenance, you're much more likely to catch that cold, develop a disease. You know, there is a theory, I don't know if it's more than a theory, but I got to find out the details of this, that at any one time, there's the potential for anything in our body, including cancer. And what and what we're doing every day can mean that that takes root or
100%
gets shunted out, you know. So those moments of alpha state, you know, those numbskulls have just got big sweeping brushes and getting rid of all that stuff that you don't need and detoxing it. So that's the thing for people who are employed. But the other thing is sometimes I go in and I do a long program with an organization. So, for instance, the longest program I've done is with Tetra Pak, the carton people. And we did that at two levels. So organisationally, they looked at the health and safety executive management standards on stress reduction. So they, as an organisation, looked at how can we reduce stress. And then individually, managers, leaders, staff looked at what can they do for themselves to make sure that they're safe. And, you know, the UK legislation around health and safety in the workplace, and we often focus on the safety, you know, falling off a ladder and toxic chemicals rather than the health part of it, says that the employer has a responsibility to the staff to keep them safe, and the staff have a responsibility for themselves and to say something if they don't feel safe. So if you are being driven to work through lunch, take work home, you know, work in a way which is unsafe to your mental, physical health, then you have a duty in law to say something about that as an employee. And I think that's empowering rather than, you know, a heavy responsibility. It's like, oh, I've got a voice, I can say something about this. So where you're in a situation, you know, in the past, you might have heard people say things like, oh, well, if you can't stand the heat, get out the kitchen. You know, it's a high pressure job and that's just how
it is. Yeah, but this is what's causing the issues, that kind of mindset and that kind of wordology, terminology.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to call it, that's what's causing the problems, is this hustle, drive yourself into the ground. And what, we're at an all-time high on all of these kind of nasty diseases, the four biggest killers, and also what, sick rates keep going up in the UK, and probably the same in the US and Europe and everywhere else, that they keep going up year on year. And why? Because of this mindset of you've got to like grind and hustle till you die, and there's no way to live. And just I want to tag on for both people, for both sets of people, whether you're employed and following a career path, or whether you're a business owner, entrepreneur, or run a business or run a team, one thing I'd say is the two big questions to ask yourself is like, one, why am I doing this? What am I doing it for? And also, another question would be, what's the point? Like, is this state I'm getting into, is there a point behind it? And a lot of the time they'll be like, no, there's no point. Like, so you've got to... That's why I believe one of the biggest and most powerful things is that having that sense of higher purpose. And when you've got that, when you know why you're doing it, and you've got the courage behind that purpose, and you, it's like when things are getting tough, I've got the courage to live in alignment with my purpose. I think that's one of the most powerful things you can have. And not enough people whether they're employed or self-employed or run their own business, I don't think enough people have that. And I think when you've got that, that's like the, that's the sat nav, that's the guiding north star to keep you grounded. And you say, okay, right, I'm having a rest, or I'm working full throttle because it's in line with what I want to achieve and my drive and my purpose for my life.
And that maybe it's got an end point. Because I think that's the thing, you know, you can drive forward, pull out all the stops, you're firing on all cylinders, because in 2 weeks' time, I can take a rest and this particular thing that has to be done on time will be done. But I think what we do is we do that, and then when the 2 weeks is up, there's just something else to do, and you just keep full on all the time. We're not meant to work like that. You know, that isn't the way nature works. You know, you don't get birds in spring going, oh, flipping heck, it's got dark, but I've got to build this nest, so I'm going to work through the night, or, you know, find enough moonlight to carry on. No, they go, oh, it's dark now, go to sleep, and they stay in balance. And, you know, we're meant to do that. We're meant to, you know, I think in some ways we need to come back to our animal roots and remember just that simple balance. And as you said, Ali, you know, does this matter? You know, why? But when you're not getting into alpha brainwaves and you're full on all the time, the adrenaline will make you look for the next thing that you need to do, and it will feel imperative. It will feel like a life and death situation. I have to edit this email, or I have to make this phone call, or I have to finish this document. It feels like a life and death situation because you're in such a stressed state. And so it's about checking in, as you say. I love that, you know, just hang on, does this actually matter? How important is this in the great scheme of things? Because we, you know, when I realised that my earring was broken this morning, I could quite easily have thought, oh, I'm late and I'll go and get some more earrings, and that's going to make me even later, and Ali's going to be waiting for the podcast recording, and oh my goodness. I just looked at it and went, man, it's a cheap earring. Ali is not going to mind if I haven't got earrings on today. It is not the end of the world.
I do mind. I'm only joking.
But it is those things, those little things that sometimes we let them just become a big thing because we're in this stress state. So everything seems like a big thing when it's not. And you just got to keep tabs on that.
Yeah. And that sometimes, I know you said about going back to like the animal side, but sometimes that can be the animal side being the problem. Do you know what I mean? We're too fight, flight or freeze in that kind of that headspace. And that can be detrimental as well. So I think sometimes when you can come out of that animal instinct and know that we are like conscious spiritual beings, do you know what I mean? Then you can deal with that. More effectively, because the body's innate response is to survive and reproduce. Do you know what I mean? And sometimes that's where we're like, I've got to do this to survive. And sometimes you can take yourself away, stop, reflect, and say, oh, actually, no, I've got the power in my mind and with my words and with my actions and with my beliefs to frame this however I want to frame it.
Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes I'm sitting at my desk, I'm just writing. There is no lion about to eat my head, but I start to realize my heart's racing and I feel like I'm in fight or flight. And I realise that what I'm doing is I'm concentrating so hard that I'm not breathing properly. So I roll my shoulders back, take a moment, take some breaths, and it switches off almost immediately. But I think if you haven't got that centred feeling to come back to, you just go, oh, why am I panicking? And here's the thing. At any point in anyone's life, there will be something to worry about. You know, if you go, oh God, I feel in a panic. There must be something wrong. What is it that's wrong? Oh yeah, there's that bill, or there's that customer, or there's, you know, there's something you will find to worry about. And then it just, you know, becomes bigger and bigger. So having that calm place to come back to and be able to just bring yourself down and just, it's okay, I've got this. You're right. And it is that balance. You know, there are good things about being an animal, which is about the balance of nature, making sure, you know, a bird doesn't go, oh, I'm a bit busy, so I won't have lunch. It'll be like, oh, there's a worm, it's lunch, and nom nom. And, you know, we're just crazy. So that balance of nature with our animal selves. And then remembering, actually, we've got a brain that can organise some of that a little bit better. Because we haven't, you know, we don't tend to really be much of a prey for other animals these days. So we invent prey, you know, that person we've got to have a difficult conversation with becomes the lion that's going to eat our heads, you know, and we go in feeling all het up, which means we come across as we're feeling defensive, but it comes across as attacking, and you know, you get into a really difficult conversation. Whereas if you've got a practice for yourself, which is about coming to a calm, centered place, remembering you're part of everything, that you've got a higher purpose, that it's possible for everything to be a lot easier than you're making it and thinking that it is. You go into that meeting breathing well, relaxed. You're going to be able to meet that person as a human, human to human, and find a way forward together rather than it becoming a big battle.
And so, I think a lot of that, what you said there, is it's changing the narrative, isn't it? It's changing the story that you're quote unquote telling to yourself. And I did this yesterday. I mean, I won't go into too much detail, but I interviewed someone for my podcast, and it was like what I'd call like a big guest. Like, I don't know how you define that. And again, I'm telling a story about how we should put labels on people, but it was a big name, let's say that. And I was like, I said to Sarah, I'm like, I'm nervous, I'm anxious. And Sarah's like, why? Like, you've done 63, 64, 65 of these podcasts. You know how to speak to people, you know how to question people. But I just built up this kind of narrative and this story that, oh, this is an amazing person that's achieved so many different things, and like, maybe I'm a lesser. And do you know what I mean? You shouldn't think absolutely. Like that. You should like try and change the narrative, change the story to make it more positive, and know that, like you said, we're all connected, we're all on one level. And I think that can make a big difference. Okay, touching off the back of all of that you've just said, there's one thing, it's just like boom, boom in my head all the time. And I got to say it because I'll forget. And the word is fear. The word fear keeps coming into my head. And I'm going to share a story with you and with everyone else about something that happened between us that you might not have even realized, but it stuck with me for a while.
Okay.
Well, I will come on to that in a second. But I think the big thing that's preventing people from taking the time, from self-care, from achieving their goals, dreams, aspirations, living their purpose, etc., making them have burnout, all of these things that we've spoken about today, a lot of the stuff is in relation to fear. So it's either preventing them, stopping them. How do you help individuals, organizations overcome this word fear, or this feeling of fear?
Well, everything you've just said is the question and the answer in the same thing. So for instance, I relate to what you're saying about the important podcast person. I was doing the biggest audience conference that I'd done. It was really fancy, like they were dressing the room, and you know, there was
strobe lights.
Yeah, absolutely. They got a DJ like off the radio as MC, and then I was the keynote speaker. So it was the biggest fee I'd ever earned up until that point, and I was subconsciously and consciously thinking, this has got to be bigger and better than I've ever done before. Whereas actually what they wanted me doing my
yourself,
thing.
Yeah.
And then just before I went on stage, I realized that I was shaking with adrenaline. And then this phrase just dropped into my head from somewhere. This is what I do. As in, this is my job. I've been doing it for 20 odd years. You know, this is what I do. It was almost like if I was a scaffolder and I went out on the highest scaffolding and was worried and had forgotten I was a scaffolder, you know. And so I said to myself, this is what I do. It's going to be okay, because this is what I know how to do well. So just go do that and don't think it's got to be something other than that. And so in that moment, the fear had no place. Then it was just excitement, because of course fear and excitement have the same physical feeling. You can just rename it, which is really handy when you're out there doing speaking. So in organizations, and if I'm working one-to-one, small groups, whatever I'm doing, when I'm talking about fear, there's two things about it. One is, everything we do comes from fear or love. So check in with yourself. You know, am I doing this because I'm fearful, or am I doing it from a place of love? And often when we're pushing ourselves too hard, it's from a fear of losing or not getting, losing face, losing money, losing the business, losing your job. It's from a place of fear. How can I do this from a place of love? You know, and actually that might mean you don't go do that thing, because you can't do it from a place of love. It's always going to be from a place of fear. So that's the first thing, that everything, I believe, everything we do comes from fear or love. And you check in with that. And then secondly, what's the fear about? Let's have a look at that. And is there a different way of doing this? So if you're fearful of it, maybe you've built it up into something. This is where neuro-linguistic programming, understanding the neurology and how we do our thinking. What are you picturing? And I probably, if I was to distill this down into one thing, this is probably how I help people the most, is getting them to realize what pictures they're creating in their heads that are frightening them. And the brain and the body and your breathing and your heart rate and everything will relate to a picture in your head as if it's a real thing happening right now.
Yeah, because so it doesn't know the difference between
it. Doesn't know the difference. Yeah. So if you're, and I did my, I'm going to use a swear word, Ali.
That's all right.
So I did my NLP training with Richard Bandler, who was one of the two originators of it. And he, I'm going to, actually, I should apologize more for the bad American accent I'm about to do. So Richard Bandler said in one of the training sessions I was in with him, he said, people often say to me, Richard, you're just making shit up. And I say to them, you're going to make up shit anyway. So make up good shit. And
that's pretty good.
Is that not too bad?
Yeah. If there's anyone listening, well, I think 55% of my listeners are in the States. So we're either going to get ridiculed or they're going to love it. One or the two.
Oh, dear. Well, apologies to everybody. So, yeah, and the point is, we all make up pictures in our heads all of the time. So say, for instance, I said to you, a little story. I was going to London on the train and I was late. I got one of those little pull-along suitcases. And I don't know if you've ever done motorbiking, but sometimes the handlebars go left and right very quickly. It's very scary. It's called a tank slapper. I was running so fast with this little suitcase, it started going left to right very quickly. It was a bit scary. I eventually jumped on the train at the very last minute and the doors closed and we took off and I was just so relieved. I got on the train. I was on one of those table seats for four and I was so hot and sweaty and I sat down and opposite me is my friend's partner who works in a merchant bank on the way to London. And I'm all hot and sweaty and I realise I've got my breakfast in my pocket and I've sat on it. And there's this person opposite me who works in a merchant bank, and I'm just like feeling hot, sweaty, stupid, just not feeling very good. Now, in that story, what train station did you picture in your mind's eye?
Nottingham.
Okay. And that suitcase, did you notice that suitcase?
Yeah.
What colour was it?
Pink.
Pink. Oh, nice. Oh, I must get one. The person sitting opposite me in the train, man or woman?
Man.
Black or white?
White.
Middle-aged, young, older?
Younger, like 30s.
Yeah. How was that person dressed? Smart or cash?
Yeah, smart. Blue suit, red tie, white shirt.
What kind of breakfast was in my pocket?
Like a sausage and bacon roll. A healthy one, not.
So in order to make sense of the story, you had to make pictures in your head, yeah, whether you were aware of it or not. And I used to do lots of training on diversity, and we could do a whole session on why you pictured a young, white, smart-dressed man who was working in the merchant bank, because it could have been a small black woman or somebody dressed casually or whatever, whatever. But we fill in the gaps with the stuff that we know the most, which is why it's so powerful when they want to recruit more black police officers to have pictures of black people as police officers for black kids to see, because you go, oh, that's now a possibility in my subconscious mind. So in order to make sense of the world, we make pictures in our heads. Sometimes we're not aware of them. Now, if you, for instance, were, oh, let's talk about what happened yesterday. You're doing a podcast with somebody who you see is very important. So you start to imagine what that will be like. You might start to imagine how nervous you might be because of how important they are. I once met one of my very biggest idols, which is Maya Angelou, American author, all-round goddess. And I queued up to speak to her in person. And as it was my turn, I burst into tears. I had to run away to the bathroom, wash my face and then queue up again because I just got myself into such a state because I built it up and I built it up and it was bigger and bigger and bigger and I got scared and scared and scared and my heart was racing and then boom, just cried. So sometimes we do this. We build something up in our mind. So fear is right there. Fear is in whatever you're creating. And it might be about the pictures you're creating. It might be the words you're saying to yourself. It might be a physical sense in your body, what you see, hear, and feel. The three key ways in which we get ourselves ready for something. And you can do that in a positive way and go, right, I'm going to meet Maya Angelou. Oh my God, this is going to be amazing. And I'm going to feel so calm and loved by her. And it's going to be incredible. Or you can scare yourself senseless and mess up the whole moment. For your podcast, you know, you think of that person as somebody that you admire and you feel connected to, rather than better than, less than stuff going on.
Yeah, don't you think in some way though, I'm going for more of a philosophical and a spiritual kind of element. Like, do you think sometimes it's just like you never know how it's gonna go?
Yeah, yeah.
Because, oh, so like you could, yeah, say, yeah, oh, this is gonna be an inspirational podcast, I'm psyched up for it, I admire this person, and then that person could be turn out to be a complete dick. Do you know what I mean? Or you could do it the other way. You could like maybe be a bit fearful and a bit maybe the lower vibrational energies, and then it just turns out amazing. So in some sense you don't you never know, and sometimes it's better to just I'm with you, I'm all for like bigging it up and positive vibes and positive self-talk and all that, but sometimes is there something to be said for just letting go and trusting the process?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So what I'm talking about here is if you're scaring yourself.
Yeah, got you.
By what you're seeing, hearing and feeling on the inside, then that needs changing. But actually, you're absolutely right. The best place to be is just to come at it feeling totally yourself. That calm, that kind of starting point that we talked about earlier. You know, you come to that place of stillness inside, remembering that we're all connected, that you're always enough, that you're always going to do the best you can, even when it doesn't turn out the way you wanted it to. You did the best you can with what you had. All of that stuff of just feeling in a calm state. And then, you know, if the pictures you've accidentally created in your head, perhaps you're remembering how something went wrong in the past and you're kind of reliving that, then we need to create different pictures. And, you know, when I'm helping people with fear of public speaking, the first question I ask
biggest
is,
fear in life, isn't it?
Yeah.
Glossophobia.
More than death.
Glossophobia.
More afraid
called.
Of that. But if you think about it, it is a fear of death, because we are tribal at our hearts. If you stand up and speak and make a mess of it, you will be ostracized from the tribe. And if you're ostracized, then you're not safe.
Yeah.
You are going to get eaten by the lion. So
yeah, yeah, yeah. Makes sense.
So it all makes sense. And because we're tripping into that animal survival, whereas we need, you know, the prefrontal cortex that knows that actually I won't die if I mess this speech up, to get ourselves into a better frame of mind. So your point about actually just being in a calm state and trusting that it will all unfold as it should, that's a great place to be.
Being more present.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then enjoying it. And if it goes even better, then it's fine. And if it doesn't go so well for whatever reason, you're in a better state to go, oh, well, I came at this from a good place. If you come at something full of adrenaline, and I've done this myself, even with 30 years experience of talking, training, speaking in public, sometimes I'll go into it in a stressed state. Then if something doesn't go as well as I would want it to, I really beat myself up and I have to work on that, because then I'm blaming myself rather than I came at this in a great way and it didn't go so well, but I can see why and that's okay and let it go, you know. So it can make a difference to your recovery rate from fear as well if you're coming from a calm place to start with.
Definitely. Let me share this story then of my
fear.
Oh yes,
how exciting. That
you helped me with, and you probably might not have even realized that this happened. And then I think we'll get you to share maybe some of your best results you've had with individuals.
Okay.
And then we'll kind of start to wrap things up, because this has been amazing. But I know obviously we've got a time constraint and we've both got stuff to do today. Otherwise we could just keep going for like hours.
I think
and
we
hours.
Could. Yeah, yeah.
But we can definitely do another one and touch on some of these topics maybe on a deeper level. But my story, we first met networking at a business networking event.
Yep.
Seems to be a way that I meet a lot of people. But yeah, building your network and growing your network, listeners, is one of the best things you can do in your life. Otherwise, we wouldn't be sitting here.
Exactly.
So we met networking. And then at the time, I'm going back, this is probably like 2013, 2013-ish, maybe, like probably 7 years ago. We're recording this in 2020 as we speak. You might be listening to this in 2025, who knows? But yeah, we met networking and I started to speak with you and learn about what you do, and it was intriguing. I was intrigued more so by the NLP and the like hypnotization kind of element, because I was fascinated by that kind of stuff at the time. And I arranged to meet you outside of the network, and I actually came to your house.
Yes.
And at the time, I had a fear of dogs, a really big fear. Like, this was something from a young age. Even the smallest of dogs, I'd be like, I'd run a mile. Even if like a little Jack Russell came, I'd be gone, off as fast as I could. And you did this thing with me, and it's going back to everything that you just mentioned about changing the pictures and all that. And you got me to think and imagine the most scariest dog. And you put it in a TV screen, and then you got me to turn the brightness down on it. And I've done more of this since. And I now know more from the psychological, from the brain, from the spiritual element, how this works. I know more now. Back then I didn't. But you did this technique, and it literally took like maybe 5 or 10 minutes, and got to like dim this idea of this scary dog down, and like change the picture and go into the TV, come out of the TV, all this kind of stuff. And no word of a lie, this is God's honest truth to you and to everyone listening in, that I've never had of a fear of dogs since.
Wow.
And I remember like a week or two later, the biggest dog coming up to me. And for the first time in years, I was able to like stroke it and like let it come around me.
Aww.
And that just is like crazy. And it's like amazingly powerful. And it's a proof that the visualization, the words, the programming, all of the belief system, all of this kind of stuff has such a huge impact and a profound impact, and it can be life-changing. And now, like, I have no problems with dogs, no issues at all. So I just wanted to share that story.
Oh,
and
wow.
Prove how like fear can consume you.
Mm.
But at the end of the day, to me, like, it's a bit cheesy and it's a bit of a cliche and it's that acronym, but like, fear, what is it? False evidence appearing real. It's just a story that you're telling yourself that isn't even true, or it could be true, but how do you know? And that's why I think as well, like going with being in the moment and trusting the process is powerful, because you can put that fear a little bit on the back burner.
Mm.
I'm also though a believer, I don't know where you stand in this pattern, but I'm also a believer that some element of fear is a good thing. Do you know what I mean?
It can keep natural. You in check. You're going to get it, aren't you? We all get it. Even people who say, oh, I never get nervous when I speak, or I never worry about stuff in business.
That's good though. They're changing their story and their narrative and their belief system. And I heard this recently. I was watching maybe a YouTube video. I was listening to the podcast, and I can't for the life of me think who it was, but they were saying they were warming up for a big speaker. Like, they weren't the keynote speaker, but they were warming up for, I don't know, your Tony Robbins or whoever. And they said, they went up to the person they were warming up for, like, do you ever get nervous? And they were like, no, I never get nervous. What are you talking about? That's stupid, blah, blah, blah. And he said, like, what I got from that was that, yeah, they do, but they just don't believe it, because they've changed the story and they changed the narrative so much that now their belief has become that I don't get nervous, even if they are experiencing some elements of nerves. So yeah, I just wanted to share that a bit as well. But yeah, what I did say originally was having a bit of fear is a good thing, isn't it? Like, having that element,
it's an interesting thing to do. I think observing your fear is the important thing, rather than jumping on that train. You observe that you're feeling fearful, and then you go, oh, what's that about? And you unpack it, and you go, you know, so it can be useful for flagging something up. And if what it's flagging up is that you've got an unreasonable expectation of yourself, or something you've created, something you've made up, you know, you made up some shit, as Richard Bandler would say, and then you can look at that. I think that's when it really has its uses. And obviously, you know, when we're using techniques like hypnosis, hypnotherapy, NLP, those kinds of things to get rid of fear, you shouldn't get rid of fear like fear of jumping off a cliff. You know, that you really want to be afraid of jumping off a cliff.
Yeah.
You know, really big, scary spiders with red bottoms, you know, they're probably poisonous. Probably being scared of that particular spider when you're in the outback is probably a really smart idea. So, you know, fear has a purpose.
Yeah.
But for me, it's about checking in with it and going, oh, I'm feeling afraid. And whatever that is for you, sweaty palms, racing head, beating hearts, not being able, feeling like you can't breathe, feeling like your throat's tight, whatever your symptom is, noticing that, I call them red flags. You notice your red flag and you go, oh, hang on, what's this about? Is it useful to me? Is it saying, don't go do that thing? And is that reasonable? Or actually, do I need to find a way around this fear? And is there an easy way for me to do that? And often there's an easier way than scaring yourself senseless, you know. So, yeah, but that's lovely, that story. I'd forgotten until you reminded me about the dog thing. Yeah.
Yeah, not many people
know
that.
It can happen really quickly, you know, because if you think of it this way, there will have been a moment in time, and we don't even need to know when that was and how that was. There'll have been a moment in time when you were afraid of dogs.
Mm.
And so it can be undone as quickly in a lot of situations, you know.
Yeah. Oh, well, we're all carrying our own trauma, our own fear, can you tap into and access what that is and do the necessary work, therapy, self-care, self-love to overcome them, because we're all capable of doing it.
Yeah.
I like what you said though, not like, I love what you said about is the fear useful, because I've never really kind of thought of it that way or maybe considered it that way. And yeah, some fears are useful. And and again, I'll just another experience of when this has happened recently for me, where fear has been a good thing and it's been useful in the sense that it's allowed me not to be arrogant about the situation or let the ego maybe take over situation. So, and I'm not condoning this, and this is a disclaimer before I say it, but there's two times in the last 2 years that I've taken psychedelics and I was fearful on both occasions.
Mm.
Two separate different types of psychedelics. Everyone knows this that listens to my podcast anyway, because I've done a podcast on both of those experiences. But I was fearful before both times, and I think that was a good thing because it allowed me to respect the substance or the plant or whatever it was for what it was, and not be arrogant or egotistical about it, like, oh yeah, I'm gonna have the most amazing trip and I'm gonna have a rebirth and an awakening and all that. I was like, no, I'm shitting myself a little bit here, and there is some worry and anxiety and fear around it. And I believe that the two times that I've done these two separate psychedelics, and I'm no stretch of the imagination an expert, I'm not clued up on these substances and these things as some people are, but I've experienced a couple of times, and I think both times I had a what I felt was a great experience and a magical experience of both times. I think that was because I had that element of fear and that kind of apprehension or maybe anxiety around it to start off with. It kept me in check, do you know what I mean? I wasn't arrogant or ego driven going into the experience. So that is an example of fear being useful. I think it can be useful, and does it bear any use? But if you're just telling yourself some BS story that's holding you back, then it's not useful.
Yeah. Absolutely. And it's about wanting it more than the wanting it needs to be bigger than the fear of it. And
yeah,
you know, and that's and so sometimes, and this goes back to something we said right at the beginning, remembering why you want to do something.
Exactly. What's the alignment, what's the driver, the desire, the purpose behind it, for sure. Yeah.
And realizing that you deserve it, you're allowed to have the life that you want. You know, you can give yourself permission to grow as a person, grow as a business, or grow in your career. Give yourself permission. And if there's somebody holding you back from that, again, have a look at that. You know, why does their opinion matter so much to you, and can you put that to one side for the greater good? The world needs your skills and needs you to shine.
Exactly. We need more love and less fear.
Yes, indeed.
More pleasure and less pain.
Yeah.
Love it. Okay, where can the people listening to this go to find out more about Pam?
Well, it's quite easy, really. So pamburrows.com. Find me on Twitter, Pam Burrows. Find me on LinkedIn, Pam Burrows. Find me on Instagram, Pam Burrows People Booster. Find me on YouTube, Pam Burrows People Booster. And YouTube actually is probably the best place if you want to see what I do, because there's quite a lot of videos on there where you can see me in conference mode, where I'm on stage doing stuff all mic'd up, but also some techniques, just me talking to camera, to give you free stuff around switching off a busy brain, creating sanity spaces, Just kind of relaxing or building your confidence. There's a whole variety of free techniques for you there on YouTube. So yeah, I'm quite easy to find. And if you want to know more about one-to-one work or small group coaching that as we speak, I'm launching this afternoon.
Awesome.
That's very exciting. Then yeah, just drop me an email, pam@pamburrows.com.
Awesome. And I'll put all the links to all of that stuff in the description so people can just click on it.
Thank you.
I'm going to finish with maybe two more questions, and then we always end the show with a quote. But if you could just leave the people listening to this with just one piece of advice or one tip, I know that's quite a difficult thing, but what would that one piece of advice be?
It is, you are precious and worthy. Give yourself permission to look after yourself.
Easy peasy. And if you could give your younger self one piece of advice, what would that be? Would it be the same thing or different?
I think it would be trust yourself. So I think I've had a history of looking to other people for the answers, and sometimes I knew what I wanted.
I think that's an entrepreneurial thing as well.
Yeah.
Seeking validation rather than trusting your impulses.
Mm.
It's one of my affirmations.
Yeah, it's the there's a thing that I often talk to people about, which is noticing how much of you is externally referenced and how much internally referenced. And
the gut will always tell you anyway.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
And
again, going back to people not knowing what they're talking about with their words and their actions, and I mentioned this on a previous podcast, is trust your gut. I don't think people always realize what that means, and it's that you've got this kind of innate internal guidance thing that's there all the time working for you, but a lot of people don't listen to it and aren't aware of it and don't act on it.
Yeah.
And just, I think that's a great piece of advice, just trust yourself, trust the process. And
there's people talk about mind and body, but what we also know is that the heart and the guts have brain cells. So they've actually been able to, obviously under a microscope, see that part of the digestive system and the heart is made up of the same cells as the brain uses.
Mm.
So we aren't all in our head. And then there's the rest of us. You know, we are feeling all of the time everything that's going on. So when you say trust your gut, it is as important as your brain, because it's reacting on a level that is much wiser than sometimes our actual rational brain is.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, a favorite quote to finish. Can you just hit us with a quote, and
okay,
then we'll wrap up.
Lovely. So, absolute pleasure being here. Thank you for having me. I mentioned her earlier, Maya Angelou, American author, civil rights activist, poet, singer, just incredible woman. If you haven't ever come across her, then do find her poem Still I Rise. It's the best thing ever if you're having a down day. But her quote that I wanted to share with you today, to remind you to look after your precious self, is that you're never on your own with whatever it is you're feeling, because as Maya Angelou would say, we are more alike than we are unalike.
Love it. Excellent. Thanks so much, Pam. Appreciate
Thank you.
It.
High Pleasure. Five. High five.
Good stuff.
Ooh,
and
good
let's do it again.
Yeah, let's.
Thank you.
Part two.
That's a wrap on another episode of the Kinetic Fitness Show. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share this podcast episode with your friends, family, and colleagues. Until next time, peace and love.